Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, we've seen some big rallies on global stock markets, haven't we, today, following Joe Biden's victory in the US presidential election. But how long is the enthusiasm likely to last, given the recession and huge economic problems that are confronting governments around the world? Independent financial advisor Nick Bruning joins us again tonight to provide insight into this and other issues, as well as all investment and money worries that you might have. He's also got some updates about pension freezes and new superannuation rules as well. Nick, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip. And what an amazing, I don't know, two, 3 days post-election.
Well,
and, then we saw the Pfizer announcement coming through last night. And at one stage, the Dow touched all-time highs, which is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
It did peter out a bit at the end, as did our market. It sort of started very strongly. We got the All Ordinaries up to about 6,600 at the start of trade this morning. It drifted off a bit to close at about 6,540 or thereabouts. But, yeah, just amazing. And that basically puts us back to where we were about August last year, Phil. So it's sort of gone up, rocketed up to the peak of 7,200 in February, and then, of course, kaboom.
Kaboom.
Yeah. Hit the low point in, what was it, sort of late-ish March, around about 4,500. And so, interestingly enough, from that low point, it just goes to show how things can turn around. We're basically up 43% from that very low point, but still about 9% down from the all-time high, which, as I said, was sort of late February there at 7,200.
Yeah, so, I don't know what's driving it in particular. Well, I can understand the Pfizer vaccine thing, right? But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the US as to what's going to happen next. I mean, you know, normally investors don't like uncertainty, do they?
Oh, well, that's right. And, look, I think the realisation is that even though Pfizer have come out, and as you mentioned, there's 11 candidate treatments or vaccines out there, the realisation is this stuff isn't going to hit the street next week. And so the delay of production and distribution and inoculations and stuff, see it probably mid next year before we see any real net effect. But and that's why a lot of economists are talking about a K-shaped economy. And you know, in the past you've heard people talk about a V-shaped, it would drop and then comes roaring back up, and then it was the U-shape, a flat bit and then roaring back up, and then a W-shape. Well, now we're at the K, the letter K, and it's basically saying there's two sorts of economies out there. There's the one that's still languishing, and that's the sort of things like the hospitality and the leisure sector, if you like. And then the online marketers and and some of those tech stocks have been roaring ahead. So I guess the message for us as investors is that there's two sort of ways of investing in shares. The standard cheap way, if you like, is what's called the index type fund, and they're quite popular because they're low cost. And so you might have an index like the ASX 200, which represents the top 200 companies in Australia by value. And so an index fund is next to nothing to run, because you simply have to copy the size of the companies by your holding, if you like. And the other way is what we call a passive fund manager. And then the active fund managers are those that sort of wheel and deal. They pick the stocks that do quite well, and they've actually done all right, some of them over the past few months or so. I mean, no one's immune from market drops, but comparing them to the indices, I should say, you know, most of them sort of tracking, or not most of them, some of them are tracking 2 or 3% above the index. So it's interesting, but yeah, no one's immune, as I say, from the corrections. But I think over the next few months, it's one of those things. We're suggesting people are using those active managers to try and extract the value out of things.
Yeah,
but it's still uncertain. I mean, who knows? We could find that I think they've said 40,000 people on this first, or the trial that Pfizer have just announced. You know, something might emerge, and suddenly we're hopefully not back to square one or the other.
Well, no, that's true. That's true. Although one of the other ones might come through as well. But I mean, one of the interesting things is that they've come out of the blocks and said, well, look, you know, our late stage trials are done and this is the result. Well, you'd think that, I know the Oxford trials are quite advanced as well. So, I mean, there are 11 candidates in late stage trials. So, you'd expect news from them over the next few months.
Absolutely. And if nothing else, we're 9 months closer to some sort of resolution from when all this stuff started back in February. So that's, you know, that's got to be a positive. But what's also interesting, Phil, is that the central banks and governments have responded with a sort of a run of fiscal, which means playing around with taxes and expenditure and monetary policy, which is the Reserve Bank playing around with interest rates, which, of course, hasn't helped our listeners that want to put money in the bank.
No.
Where
that's right. Yeah, well, exactly. People are putting it in well, term deposits are just not a place to be at the moment.
Well, look, I was looking today just to see what's out there and sort of the best you're going to get, which is from the second and third tier banks, is pretty much about 1% per annum. Yeah. Then you go to the big four, and we're talking about term deposits 6-12 months, 0.5%, Phil, 0.5%. And if inflation returns, which it probably will, in real terms, you're probably going backwards. There's a few of these online saver accounts where you get a bit of a sweetener if you cuff up $100 or a few hundred dollars a month and top it up. They'll give you up to 1.5%, but that's only normally for a few months. And there's also a cap on the amount that you can put into. So, look, it's becoming a real challenge, particularly for retirees. The days of sort of getting your 4 or 5 or 6% are long gone. So I guess what most retirees are facing is either taking on additional risk, which we might have a quick chat about, but equally, you're kind of forced to draw on your capital. There's no two ways about it. If you wanted to stay completely safe, you really are being forced to bite into things. But that's why people are looking around to see what else is out there. And I guess we've spoken many times about risk and the traps of people that get sucked into, not through any fault of their own, it's because some of the marketing is very effective in sucking people into things that supposedly look safe, but are in fact really quite high risk. And I guess my view is that as long as you genuinely understand the risk and it's up front and out there and in your face that you know what you're getting yourself into, then you're making an informed decision. I get really annoyed when people sort of make out like this stuff's as safe as a bank or not quite as safe but as close enough to it when they're really not, and that's the trap. So people, I guess you're looking at things like bonds. Now even there, and just for everyone's benefit to explain what a bond is, we sometimes throw these terms around without really explaining what they are. A corporation, a big company, has got three ways of making or raising money if they want to expand. Perhaps it's a BHP getting a new mine or developing a mine or something like that. So they can either retain the profits, they can also raise additional capital by putting out shares, or they can borrow money, and that's what they do through the issue of these bonds. So in effect, a bond is a loan to a corporation or a government at a fixed rate of interest and for generally a set term. Now, people might not realise it, but the world stock market all up is about $70 trillion in total. The bond market, Phil, is $128 trillion. It's nearly double. People don't realise how big the bond market is. But even there, you're probably looking at returns of, 3-4%, and that's often because the active bond portfolio managers are trading those bonds. So they're buying and selling them and also on currency stuff. So, again, people might not realise, but if you're in a capital-stable super fund, a conservative super fund, you've probably got around about 70% of your money tied up in bonds.
In corporate loans.
Corporate or government, and not only Australian but also international is a big part of it too. Mm-hmm.
What about, I noticed that CoreLogic last week seemed to record a bit of an uptick in the housing market. I mean, depending where you are in the country, it can be regarded as overpriced anyway.
Look,
I don't know. I mean, is it? What do you think?
Interesting. It is, and look, in WA, where I'm from, we've had a real kick up in property prices, really, and we have across Australia. Most cities,
but it's been a bit flat in WA for a while too.
It has. So there's a latency that's sort of catching up. But look, there's a couple of things about property, and I'm sure we've got plenty of fans to say you can't go wrong with property, but I'm a bit more sceptical than that. Let's not forget a couple of things. Firstly, that we're in a bit of a mortgage honeymoon in that A, you've got those rates very low, but B, the banks can't move on people. And I think that sort of things like bankruptcies and loan repayment holidays have been extended to March next year. So in some respects, it masks a little bit of what's going on out there. And even in the lead up to this crisis back in February, we were looking at people that were already distressed. And sure, they're taking a lot of comfort from the fact that the banks aren't ringing them every day, but that's not going to last forever. So the other thing too, which is sort of partly why I think the government's been incentivizing the construction sector with the various grants and stuff, is that it's one of the things we don't talk a lot about, but thanks to COVID, or no thanks to COVID, our immigration has plummeted. In fact, I think, you know, we're talking a couple of thousand people. I don't know, but certainly we were planning on 285,000 or something like that moving to Australia as migrants. That's pretty much disappeared. So that's 285,000 people that won't be buying houses and other
won't need somewhere to live
over the next year or so. So exactly. So all of that has to have an effect. So yeah, I mean, good luck if you've made some money in the last few months. I think I'm a little bit cautious about jumping into things. I think once the dust settles post-March, when we see some of these protection measures withdrawn, we might get a clearer picture of what's really going on out there.
Okay. Mm. All right. Robert's been waiting on. Robert, good evening. Welcome to Night Life.
Hello, Phil and Nick. Just a question about superannuation, whole of life investment. Mm. How does Centrelink assess the income coming out of that?
So I'm presuming, Robert, that it's an old whole of life insurance policy that was set up as a superannuation fund. Is that right?
Yes, my superannuation fund.
Is a whole of.
So I can't asset. I can't get at the principal. That's finished.
Oh, okay.
I just get income, and if I die, there's nothing there to go into my estate.
Right, okay. Yeah, it sounds like it's actually an annuity. It does depend a little bit on when it was set up. If it was established prior to 2014, the good thing about those is that they were exempt from the asset test 100%. So, in fact, it's only, I think, a portion of the income that's assessed by Centrelink. And if you're a single person, you can have assessable income of up to $178 a fortnight. And if you're a couple, it's a combined $316 a fortnight before Centrelink start to reduce it. If it was established, I think, after 2014 up to 2007, actually 2007, I think it was.
My date was 2006.
Okay, so I think you're probably under the rules where 50% of it was assessed under the asset test. So, and that's basically how it's being. Are you receiving full pension at the moment, Robert?
No, only a part pension. And okay. Then the reason I'm calling, they've just reduced my part pension.
Yep.
And I was wondering if they were assessing this whole of life in a different manner than before.
No, they're not. And in fact, there's quite a few people have been caught by that. And so what's happened is that normally in March and September, the pensions increase by virtue of either inflation, pension and beneficiary cost of living index, or male total average weekly earnings. And for the first time in I don't know how many years...
That's right. Inflation's gone
backwards. It
didn't
go up. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
in fact, if you like, the government could have taken a bit off you because we had deflation, but in fact, they held it as it was. However, one of the things that occurred back in March when the last time was that they assessed these, they looked at the value of shares and other investments. So, Robert, I'm wondering if you've got some money invested in shares or other investment funds?
No, that's my only investment.
Okay, well, it's a bit puzzling. Yeah, it's probably worth a phone call, because what I was about to explain to people is that as a result of the drop in investment values back in March, Centrelink actually re-ran their computer systems so that they calculated it post the crash, if you like. Now, a lot of people with account-based pensions and shares and stuff valued them, the values went down, so they received a nice boost in pension. But unfortunately, even though they didn't increase the pension, they re-ran the systems on the 20th of September. Obviously, some of those shares and things had come up in value again. And so as a result, the effects of the means test took an effect on the amount of pension that they received. So if you were asset tested, you would have lost $3 per fortnight for every 1,000. And if you were income tested, well, it gets a bit more complicated. But that's possibly what happened to you, Robert, and certainly anyone else that's seen a bit of a drop in pension will be wondering why. Well, that's probably the reason. It's those investments that you've got were revalued on the 20th of September.
Oh, even though that amount doesn't vary.
Well, that's why I'm a bit puzzled. But if it's a genuine annuity, then normally those things are pretty much fixed. So there was no change in the rules with respect to with annuities on the 20th of September. What you might want to do is give Centrelink a call. You might have to get a cup of tea and a bit of a sandwich for the wait, but 1-3-2-3-00.
Yeah. Right.
And give them a call and just sort of get them to check the records that they've got. Just by way of, for everyone's benefit, Phil, sometimes stuff's on the system, and a lot of Centrelink clients assume that Centrelink are keeping track of values of investments, shares and all that sort of stuff because they gave them all the information in the first place. They actually don't. The systems can't keep track of what's gone. So we always encourage people that, reasonably regularly, once or twice a year, just check to see that the Centrelink records actually match what you've got. Because there's many occasions when people are entitled a bit more.
Okay, Robert, good luck with it. And, thanks for raising it. Ian, g'day.
Hello.
Hi, Ian.
Hi, Ian.
Hi, how are you going? My question's about the class action that's happening against AMP at the moment. Like, I've got a letter in that because they said I can join it if I'd like to. But I just wonder, pardon me, if it's actually worthwhile to sign up and register.
We've got to be a little bit careful, but just for everyone's benefit, a class action is where there's, I think this particular one is over the change in AMP's share price and whether or not all the information was disclosed to the shareholders. It will depend on how many shares you've got, what sort of money you might expect to receive. It's kind of, it's an interesting thing because at the moment, from what I understand, the AMP is a bit of a takeover target. There's a couple of suitors sniffing around to potentially buy the shares. So, it really is, in my view, for my own personal situation, I got some free shares from AMP because of I had an AMP policy. I reckon I might get,
there's no 50, particular negative. There's no particular negatives in Ian. It's not going to cost you anything, Ian, to join.
It won't. But equally, if it's found, then you might think that you could have gone and done your own action against AMP and had a settlement outside of the class action arrangement. So, each to their own. Look, as I say, AMP looks like it's going to be taken over, so you might get more for your shares too as a result of that.
I've been waiting for them to come up for the last 10 years.
Well, you and me both, my friend.
Yeah.
All right, Ian.
Yeah. All right, then, thank you for that.
Good luck with it. Yeah.
No worries. That's generally the thing with class actions, isn't it? There's no particular cost in being associated with them.
No, there isn't.
Sometimes people, you're right, sometimes people have run their own actions, but, most of us probably don't want to do that.
True. Let's make no mistake, the lawyers do very, very well out of it.
Oh, yeah,
they've got so many people, and that's the business that they're in. I've seen, as I said, I worked out mine would be a few bucks if it came good. So, like you say,
yep,
better than nothing.
All right. Hello, Ted.
Philip.
Yes, Ted.
Hello, Ted.
Hello. Hi. Just a query about the super limits. Scott Morrison, when he was treasurer, put the $1.6 million limit on the super. Mm-hmm. Am I dreaming or was that supposed to be indexed?
It is indexed. It's actually linked to it doesn't go up by sort of fractions of a dollar. I think it goes up in $100,000 lots. It's also tied through to what's called the concessional contribution cap, which is $25,000 now. It's when it goes up by an amount that allows it to go up by $5,000 at a time, and then that'll flow through to all of those other things as well. So, yes, had inflation continued on as it should, we might have seen it go to $1.7 million this year, but with deflation, that hasn't happened. So we just have to wait for a bit to see, hopefully, that it flows through. But you're quite right, it is indexed, but it's done in chunks rather than in small fractional amounts.
Okay, now, it was supposedly, I did get my figure down to $1.6 million at the end of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
2019 was a boom review. It bounced up to about 1.8.
Yeah.
And obviously, this year it fell out, fell an awful lot. It's come back.
Yeah.
What, that 200,000 over the 1.6, was that just left there or was it taxed?
Yeah, I think it said once you exceed the transfer balance cap, I think you need to move it back into accumulation phase.
Building it over the 1.6. The inflation just the stock market went well, and the figure went up.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that you have to move it back into accumulation phase. You can't go over, exceed the $1.6 million cap. Look, to be honest, it's something I haven't checked. It's not everyone has that problem, which is good for you, Ted. But I think you need to move it back into accumulation phase. Don't know.
I mean, the fact that you can't reinvest into the SEPRIF, you move it into your accumulation phase, and then it falls to say 1.4. You can't slide it back to 1.6.
Well, yes, but you can make contributions if you've come under that to get it back. So that's the upside of these things.
Mm. Contribution to the super or only to the accumulation section?
To accumulation section, and then you can combine the two by commencing a new account-based pension.
You need to start a new pension.
That's right, yep.
Right. Okay, and this is all still subject to work test, isn't it?
That also is changing as well. That's one of the pieces of legislation we'd hope would pass, but it's still sort of stuck in the Senate, unfortunately. There are changes to the work test for people over 65. So it's sort of half gone through. The concessional contribution cap of $25,000 has now been increased to 67 years of age, so you don't have to satisfy the work test in order to contribute to super up to 67. The non-concessional, which is that $100,000 thing, is meant to go to 100 grand, but it hasn't actually passed the Senate yet. So when that happens, it'll mean you don't need to satisfy the work test up to 67. Beyond 67, up to 75, you still have to satisfy that 40 hours in the 30-day consecutive period. But then, of course, over and above that, again, you've got this thing called super downsizer for people that sell the family home. So it does depend a bit on your age, Ted, whether you can or can't.
So I'm running around like we'll just might for a week.
Sneak in. That's fine.
Just like a pass the test.
Yeah.
All right, Ted. Good on you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. One of my texters says, can I start up my own transition to retirement fund or do I have to go through a financial advisor or my superannuation fund?
No, you can. You can't. You have to have a superannuation fund to run transition to retirement through, but there's nothing to stop you setting it up with the super fund that you're in at the moment. Perhaps it's an industry fund or something like that. Mm. You can set up your own transition to retirement, but then that involves setting up a self-managed super fund, and I'm not the biggest fan of those. I think they're kind of overrated, to be honest, but that's one way of doing it yourself. But you just got to weigh up the cost of doing all that sort of stuff. In most instances, Phil, you're better off using a low-cost public office scheme.
Hmm. Okay. Larry says, hi, any advice on capital notes on offer from Bendigo Bank and Westpac? High returns, 9-year investment, and an option to convert to shares at the end of that time.
These have been out for a while, and there's all sorts of different variants, and the big banks have been doing them. So, again, this is sort of like a bond a bit, Philip, except it's a convertible one that, as you say, you can convert to a share at a later point in time. I guess that one of the issues that others have raised, and this is no reflection on the Bendigo or any of the others, is where they rank in terms of risk. If you look into the fine print, you discover that they're not as secure as a bond, perhaps, and they're not sort of the same risk rating as the direct share. So it's interesting that a lot of these offers tend to go out to the retail consumers, but they don't often get taken up by the professional fund managers, which is interesting. They'd rather stick with the things that they know and love without some of these clauses that sometimes exist in these various variants on fixed interest securities. So perhaps it's worthwhile having a look at the fine print just to understand what can go wrong and what sort of risk is involved with the capital that you put in there.
Okay. All right, Megan. G'day, Megan. Hello, Megan.
How are you?
Not bad.
Hi, Phil, and I can't remember the name of your guest.
Nick Bruning.
It's Nick Bruning.
Yeah. Hi, Nick. I do apologise.
Hello. Good, thanks.
Hi, Nick. I've got a slightly left of field question. Real estate prices.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is going on, specifically Sydney? It's totally out of control. And how do we ever consider the possibility that we could enter the arena as home buyers And where the heck is the money coming from? Where, why are these people able to pay one and a half to two and a half? What's going on?
Well, it's partly fueled by the fact that money's so cheap. And, you know, we mentioned at the outset how depositors are being smashed. Well, the upside for borrowers is that interest rates are, you know, crazy prices. So you can get a new loan if you're a first home buyer under about 3%. I think the average mortgage is still about 3% per year. And, look, there's many towns, country, cities around Australia where you actually do the numbers and work out that the cost of the mortgage repayment is sometimes less than the rent that you'll pay because of the rental shortages in some places or equivalent to. So people are looking at those numbers and saying, well, let's borrow what we can and go and buy a house. So with the availability of money and it's so cheap, that's pushed up the prices. And in fact, there's an argument that says that's also contributed quite significantly to the rise in share prices, the low cost of money. And this all stems back to the global financial crisis. Remember that. But interest rates have been very low since then. So look, I share your pain, and it's just it's an unfortunate thing. As I said, I'm not sure how things will play out. There's plenty of doomsayers out there which will talk about sort of big corrections in the property market and stuff. I, as I said at the outset, I'd like to see how things pan out once a lot of these protections are removed, whether it's March next year or a little bit later, just to see how things wash out. Because okay. I'm with you. I think affordability is a huge issue. And we're seeing wages pretty much frozen for the better part of 3 or 4 years. Pensions frozen, as we've said just a couple of minutes ago. It's a real problem, and affordability has to come into it at some point.
Yep,
But my point is, like, if real estate, you know, on average is bouncing around the 1.5 million mark for a residential property in Sydney, to qualify for the loan, you've got to present yourself with a fairly hefty deposit. Like, who's got that sitting around that I'm aware of?
Well, from a standing start, Megan, that you're quite right. From a standing start, in the big cities of Sydney and Melbourne, it is out of reach.
Yeah, and then based on the purchase price, so you know, let's say you've got that 20% sitting in your back pocket, so your mortgage is hovering around 1 to 1.2 million. Even at 3%, that is an extraordinary amount of money to spread over 30 years on a monthly basis.
No question about it. Yeah. That's true, isn't it, Nick? From a standing start, in most of Sydney and Melbourne, not all of it, but most of it.
Yeah.
From a standing start, if you've got nothing else to bring to the table other than, you know, a bank loan, it's very difficult to get into.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing...
That's not true across the whole of Australia, by the way.
It's not, but Sydney and Melbourne, to a certain extent, is the same sort of message there. And I just shake my head and you think the time must come where things head south,
Well...
But at the moment, they're not.
No, exactly. All right. Now, Alan, sorry, you've been waiting there. Best way for a sole trader to put money into super?
Yeah, g'day, guys. Just as you just said, so I'm not a PTY LTD, just a sole trader. Is there a way of putting money into super pre-tax, like as if I would be under employee of a company?
Yeah, in fact, there were some changes a couple of years ago which made it a lot easier. So we're talking about these things called concessional contributions. That's just fancy talk for someone claiming a tax deduction. So from 2018 on, you can contribute up to $25,000 per year and claim it as a personal tax deduction. It's a personal concessional contribution. The other part to that is that if your balance in super is less than $500,000, since last year you've been able to roll over the unused part. So let's just say that last year you paid nothing into super at all. you've got the full $25,000. That can be added to this year. So in effect, you could put in $50,000 this year and claim the whole lot as a tax deduction. Now, bear in mind that when you do that, it's subject to a contributions tax of 15%. There's another tax that comes in if your income's over $250,000. But essentially, you can put in that, as I said, that $25,000 rollover provision, if you like, for up to 5 years. So potentially up to $125,000 if your balance is under $500,000. So hopefully you're in that position and you've got a nice tax deduction.
Yeah, right. So the concessional tax, that 15%, that's what you'd pay normally, isn't it, for if you're underemployed?
Well, that's no. It's the tax that's charged by the government on any tax deductible contribution that's paid into super. So it applies to the $25,000. If you stick in up to $100,000 without claiming a deduction, then there's no contributions tax that comes out of that. So it only applies to the amount that's been paid in where someone's claimed a tax deduction. Now, I say someone because if you're working for an employer, the employer pays in the 9.5%. That's also subject to the 15% contributions tax. But you raise a really good point because one of the issues is that for people that are on an income and they perhaps go into a salary sacrifice arrangement, understand that you don't pay tax on your income up to $18,200. So for people that salary sacrifice everything down to $0, it's not actually that clever because you're still paying 15% contributions tax, where if you'd had the money in your hot little hand, you wouldn't have paid any tax at all. So probably the sweet spot's around about, $25,000. If your income comes below that, I think it's questionable whether there's value in putting the money into super and claiming it as a deduction.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Al. Good on you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Raj. Hello, Raj.
Hello, Raj. Hello, Nick.
Raj.
Thank you. Yeah. My question is, people often say, like, we need at least $1 million to survive after retirement. So we need to have a lot of money in the super. So what is your opinion on how much money should be there in the super to retire in a reasonable, comfortable way?
Well, Raj, I'm glad you asked him this because Nick's written a book about this very matter.
And it's not Uncle Raj either, but thank you, Raj, for the question. Look, it is a really big myth that's perpetuated by the super funds. Look, it's in their interest to encourage us to stick money into whatever investment, whether it's super or anything else. And my argument is this, that they they fail to recognise our fantastic social security system, the age pension. So if you were lucky to have, say, $300,000 in super, when you get to retirement, you stick that money into a thing called an account-based pension. Let's say that's all you've got. On the normal rate of drawdown, which would be 5%, you'd be taking out $15,000 a year. Now, here's the thing. The full age pension at the moment, and thanks to all the means tests and the concessions and stuff that are going on, it's pretty certain that you get close to the full pension, okay? So the full pension for a couple, at the moment, it comes out at $37,013 or thereabouts. So you add the $37,000 at the 15. There's $52,000 a year for a couple, home-owning couple, tax-free. You've got the concessions that come with the pension concession card. So it's your pills for $6.60, your script capped out at $314 for the year. You're getting discounts on your local government charges, water supply charges, depending where you live, free public transport, depending on where you live in Australia. It's not bad. And you know, you'd want to be debt-free. You'd want to make sure that that's not allowing for, you know, the trips overseas or if you could take them, all those sorts of things. But, you know, the other thing to recognise is that as you get older, your expenses do decline. And we've noticed that most people that sort of get into their late 70s and 80s decline by about 30% on their base cost of living. That's because you don't need another set of glasses and you don't need a new blender. It tends to slow down. So, again, if the end game is to leave the kids with as much as you possibly can, then you're going to want to preserve that capital. The best plan is to pass away owing your credit card $10,000. and most of us work on the premise that, well, whatever's left when I go for the kids is what they can have. But you know what? I'm going to have a good time between now and then. And on that sort of modelling, I reckon you could reasonably get away with $300,000, if about $52,000. And that sort of sits in the mid-range of what people like the Association Superannuation Fund say is for a modest, comfortable retirement.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. Yeah.
Thanks, Raj. Good on you. Yeah. I mean, just to add to that too, Nick, I know we've said this before, but to realise $50,000 out of savings alone in super, you'd need nearly a million, wouldn't you?
Oh, well, in fact, Phil, if you were going to rely on
if you're relying on that, yeah.
6.2 million, I worked it out, at your 0.8% on the current interest rates, and that's it's just not possible. So there has to be that balance between drawing on capital and taking a bit of extra risk to get the returns on your super. But, it's certainly nowhere near the $1 million. Nice if you've got it. No reason to be feeling bad if you're getting close to it. It just gives you more
choices.
That's
right. If you've got $1 million, that's fine. I mean,
great. Yeah, I mean, retire earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got all those choices.
Mark makes a point about real estate prices, which I hope I made too. I don't want to sound as though, the whole place is about Sydney and Melbourne, because it's not. Mark says, I've just purchased a 3-bedroom house in Ballarat with a $300,000 loan, 5% deposit, part of the government's first home owner scheme. My repayments are $200 a month less than my rent in South Yarra.
There you go. Well, that was the point I was making.
I can believe that. Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah, and look, and as you said, I know that in suburban Perth, things have moved along a bit lately, but, you can still get a 4x2. And, okay, you're not going to be living in the CBD or a place with leafy trees everywhere, but you're looking at sort of $350,000. We'll get you a 4x2.
That's right. That's right. Bill, g'day. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Nick. Look, I was just wondering, is there a sunset clause on capital gains tax?
No, sadly. So for everyone's benefit, capital gains tax applies to any asset that was acquired after September 19, 1985. But if you've held the asset for more than 12 months, then the good news is that you only pay tax on half the profit that you've made. Now, it's also a bit of a misunderstanding out there that there's a capital gains tax rate. There isn't. The actual gain, or that half profit, is added to your income in the year that you sell that asset. So it's about timing. And we get a lot of people that sort of get close to retirement and point out that if they, finish up work on the 30th of June and they've sold their property in May that same year, then they're going to be up for a wallop of tax. But if they defer the sale until the new financial year where they're no longer working, then they might find that their capital gain is all that the income that they've got, and they might find that the tax is substantially less. Bill, the other thing to remember too is that, and I don't have the latest figures because of the tax changes haven't come through, but you sound like you're not in your 20s. You get things like the seniors in Australia's pensioners tax offset, the low income tax offset, and you're probably looking at about $35,000 or thereabouts before you'd be up for any tax anyway. So it's all about how much capital gain we're talking about. But
what about $900,000?
Well, is that the actual profit, or is that half?
Yeah,
the profit. So, $900,000 profit, 50% of that, $450,000, would be the income, and you'd be paying tax on that figure.
Gee whiz.
Well, look on the bright side.
Look on the bright side, Bill.
Even though that's $900,000, and you'll be paying a significant amount of tax, there's no question about it. And again, depending on age, a lot of these sort of little things that you might do to mitigate some of the tax, like paying money into super and stuff, will depend on your age and the ability to access it. But most of those things, well, particularly super, once you get to 75, those options disappear completely.
All right, Bill, thank you. 1-300-800-222. Perneet, hello. Hi, Perneet.
How are you doing, Nick?
Not bad.
Good, thanks, Perneet.
Just a question about superannuation.
Yep, far away.
If as a couple we had $500,000 superannuation when we retired, and we had our own house mortgage free, but we also had some savings in the bank, at what threshold do we stop getting the full pension?
Right. So there's two tests. There's an income test and an asset test. And because the income test has been changed with deeming rates being so low now, it's almost negligible. But as a couple, you can have assets of up to $876,500, which excludes the value of the family home, providing you're sitting on a property that's 2 hectares or less. So $876,500. Now, a couple of things on that. One is to make sure that the assets are actually at the scrap value. So even though you might have things like your contents insured for $110,000, Centrelink will accept the value if you took it to a second-hand dealer, so usually $10,000. And similarly, things like cars and stuff, it's not the insured value. Centrelink will accept the trade-in value of those sorts of fixed assets. So make sure that you're using realistic assets like that. You would be affected by the asset test. Now, this is going to sound bizarre, but there's also an incentive for you to spend money, Punit, because this is our system. Under the asset test, each $1,000 over the threshold reduces your pension by $3 a fortnight. If you worked out over a year, that works out to be $78 reduction in your pension over a year for $1,000. Now, if you worked it back to sort of an equivalent interest rate, that's the same as 7.8%. So here's the thing. If you spent $10,000 on doing up your house, which is moving the money from an area where Centrelink would look at it to where they wouldn't look at it, you've lowered your assets by 10 grand, you'd pick up an extra $780 per year from Centrelink, which is an effective 7.8% return on your money. It's bizarre, but it's better than sticking your money in the bank.
That 800 something in assets does not include the house that we live in.
No.
But that would include the savings that we would have accumulated.
It does. It includes all the money in your savings. It includes money in superannuation if you're over age pension age. It includes bullion, cash, gifts, all those sorts of things get included in the $876,500.
Including the $500,000 we might have in super as a couple.
Yes, it does. Yep. It does. That's up until age pension age. So if there's a difference in age between you and your partner, it might be a temporary remedy, but you could stick the money into the younger person's age. It would be completely ignored by Centrelink until that person reaches age pension age. So it's actually a very effective strategy that we use, is to move money into a younger person's super fund, because Centrelink ignore it until they reach pension age.
Understood. So up to 800, we get full pension.
Well, yeah, later on, of course, that will then count once they reach age pension age, and you could lose a part or all of your pension then.
Okay.
Thank you for your help.
Thanks, Punit.
Bear in mind too, Philip, that threshold increases normally 3 times per year, so March, right, and September and July. So it's $876,500 now. And for any singles out there, the upper threshold is $583,000, again, excluding the value of the family home. And non-homeowners get an additional $214,500.
Okay. Maria, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Maria.
Oh, Nick. Oh, thank you so much. I lost my son, who was 27.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep.
In August. And, yes, obviously didn't have a will. And he didn't have any because he actually, I'm on a disability pension and I was struggling to keep him, but away from me. So I actually said to him, you know, take out your super, with the COVID issues.
Yeah.
So he did. But my issue is he has a daughter, but from what I can gather, it was never explained to him that he would lose his insurance. Okay, it was in the industry. And I've looked up all that sort of scenario. And I wanted to know when the opt-in and opt-out was, because I've looked up on his, he had severe depression and anxiety, which obviously...
Yeah. You mean he's lost his life insurance policy that was attached to the super fund?
Yes, but the weird thing was, it was through REST Super, sorry, if I'm allowed to say that. So then his employer was paying into a new one, and it could have been a default fund. And they said, and I asked them, how did that go through? Like, the money's not coming to me. I just want it to go to his daughter.
I'm
saying, so they said, we tried to call him a few times. Well, he'd had a back operation. He could barely walk. His mental health, which I can back up on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he had to opt in or opt out. And then I just...
All right. Look, there's a couple of things here. It's a broader issue that's been a real... Yeah, it's been a real problem with the government's attempt to make super more affordable and more effective. And certainly some of those issues where they've removed the automatic life insurance has been a big, big problem. And certainly, you know, some members are very happy about it. Oh, I'm not paying the insurance company for something I don't need. But Maria's problem is exactly what we were scared of, where people that pass away, the only insurance or the only significant asset is actually the life insurance that was attached to the super fund. Now, back to Maria's situation, it will depend a bit on the account balance at the time that her son passed away. But look, sometimes these things are also covered under total and permanent disability, and things like mental illness and stuff like that does come under that. So I'd actually go back to the super funds concerned and just see how it goes. Your second remedy is to actually take it to AFCA, which is the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, and have a chat with them about it to see AFCA, the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. It's the free external complaints or dispute resolution scheme. All funds are required to have an internal scheme, but if you don't have resolution there, then you might take it to AFCA for them to have a look at it. Unfortunately...
Can you just repeat that first one you gave me?
It's AFCA. A, F for Foxtrot, C, A. Yeah. So AFCA.gov.au. If you go to that website.
Yeah.
Have you got a computer, Maria?
No, but I...
We'll just take down this number, Maria. Have you got a pen?
Yeah.
1-800...
Yeah.
931...
Yeah.
678. It's a free call.
What about me wanting it? It's just what's real and what's right and not right.
Yeah.
It's a free call. Give them a call.
Yeah, but sometimes if it's a pre-existing condition, these things were there when cover was in place, and on that basis there might be a claim against them. So good luck, Maria, and I'm sorry to hear of your loss and hope everything works out for you.
Thanks, Maria. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Now, AFCA actually can be quite effective, actually.
Oh, look.
I'm not saying this on their behalf because I'm not in their kick, but I know this from listeners over the years who've said, you know.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I've never had dealings with them directly, Philip, so that's a good sign. But
exactly.
Yeah, no, they are good. And look, the fact is they're free. And, you know, you often see ads pop up on TV for various legal firms, but I'll tell you what, they're very reluctant to tell you about the free AFCA service that's there. Compensation up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are limits as to how much they can get involved with it, but it's pretty generous. Yep. Pretty generous.
Yep. Okay. All right. We've probably got time for one more quick one. Sorry, Tony, you've been waiting on there, but we're running out of time. Can you be brief for me? Hi, Tony.
Hello.
Hi, Tony. Can you be brief for me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, look, just very briefly, with super in retirement, I'm reluctant to convert to pension. In other words, not keen on letting a big capital amount go. I know there are tax breaks. I also know that there are incredibly high charges when you convert to pension. Is this a good idea?
Okay, so converting to pension shouldn't change the costs at all. You do save tax because it moves from an area where you're being taxed 15% on the earnings to where you're being taxed at nil. Also, under the COVID concessions, you've got a reduced amount that you're compelled to take out. So it depends on your age. But, for example, between 65 and 74, you only now need to take out 2.5%. Now, there's no reason for you to take that out every month. You could take it out on the 29th of June next year, your 2.5% for the whole year, if that's what you choose to do. So there's quite a bit of flexibility. But certainly in terms of charges, it should be no more than what you're paying now for super and accumulation phase, to be perfectly honest. So I'd be checking into that.
Yeah, but generally, is not converting to pension a good idea?
Well, no, I think it is. You're better off converting to a pension because you're paying tax that you needn't. And if you're drawing money out of that super anyway, then I'd be doing it in a more tax-effective way.
But the point I make is you lose control of a quite a huge capital amount when you do that. That's the point I'm talking about.
Well, it's a moot point because you can certainly invest it any way you want. If you want it to be invested in perfectly safe stuff, you can replicate exactly what's in your super fund now.
Yeah, and you can muck around with it. investments inside the super fund anyway, can't you? Usually,
absolutely.
Tony.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony. We better leave it there. That's true, isn't it, Nick? You can
absolutely. And
direct your super fund to invest in whatever you want. Well, within reason. Yeah.
If you want to put it all in cash earning 0.5%, Tony, you can tell me to Philip, you can do exactly that. Yeah.
All right, Nick, time has flown, but it's always interesting and always informative. And I do thank you for your time. Nick Bruning's with us, an independent financial advisor. Nick, we'll get you back down the track, but in the meantime...
Look forward to it.
Yeah, stay safe.
Good on. I will. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Nick Bruning, who joins us regularly to discuss finance and investment.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.